Welcome to Keep the Ball Rolling, presented by Tommy Media. On today's show, we discuss the come-from-behind win over the Gustes. Then we sit down with the coordinator, Wally Kaczynski, and linebacker, Matt Mitchell, for a very fun interview. And then we wrap the show with bets for the Bethel game.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us on KTBR, Keep the Ball Rolling, the only sports podcast where sleep deprivation is a part of our regularly scheduled content. I'm Noah Brown, sitting alongside Brady Halbmeyer and Althea Larson. And Brady, that Gustavus game. Before we start, anyway, I've got five not-so-crisp ones for you. Here we go. We got
I'll take him.
One, two, three, four, five.
There you are.
Making it rain here in the studio.
That was, oh my goodness, probably the most intense and probably the sloppiest game of football I have seen the Tommies play since 2 years ago at Concordia when they won. That was like, what, 23-21, 22-21?
Yep, the last second to Walt Vogel. Yeah. Tommy's got to come from behind win, down 13-0 at the half, and up until about 5 minutes, what did we score, about 5 minutes ago, and it looked like the season was over, because you lose that game, the season is over. They throw in Ronnie Jones, the backup quarterback, in for the second drive of the second half, in what is going to be known as probably the move that saved the season for the Tommies. You know, a gutsy move from Caruso to take out a two-year starter and put in the backup, but Ronnie did just what he needed to, score two touchdowns for the Tommies, including a 4th-and-8 throw to the end zone in double coverage for a touchdown to win the game.
Yeah, that was probably one of the best plays I have seen from this Tommy offense all season long. Because they had scored, Ronnie Jones on like second down, scored on a quarterback keeper just to draw right up the middle, to cut the lead to 13-7. And that was probably right around, 12, 13 minutes left in the game. Gustavus gets the ball back. They, not quite a three and out, but give it back. And then the St. Thomas marches down the field and they get to the red zone, or close to the red zone, and there are 3 minutes left. And you're like, okay, this is their last shot. They've got their timeouts, but the way Gustavus had been moving the ball all game long, you knew that this was now or never. And Caruso had gone for it on fourth down a couple of other times throughout the game and did not make it. So I'm sitting there, like in the back corner of the end zone with my camera, and I'm just sitting there like, this is it. We're done. Our season is over. We're two losses, and then you got Bethel next week, and they're, what, now 22, 23?
Yep, 22 now.
In the national rankings, they're moving upward. They're a really good team. Yep. If we lose to Gustavus, who's not ranked, who knows what's going to happen? This is the first time we would have dropped three games in, probably 7-8 years.
Yeah.
But then Ronnie Jones, just cool as ever, firing over the middle, right into double coverage, but comes down with the ball, and
yeah, Gabe Green scores the game-winning touchdown. Yeah, a 25-yard touchdown. And he threw it, into double coverage. An incredible throw, a gutsy throw from a backup quarterback who has seen no meaningful snaps all season. I mean, he's played a lot, but by the time he gets in the game, it's over. So, I mean, the high-pressure situations he hasn't seen, and the time he did see it, cool as a cucumber, like you said, that's a very promising sign here for this Tommy team.
And I think a more promising sign is how the defense responded.
Yeah.
They allowed 230-some passing yards in the first half alone, probably one of the dirtiest, sloppiest, not good performances this defense has had in forever. I mean, it was bad. It was really, really bad. They allowed like negative 20 yards rushing. So run defense, strong as ever. But the passing defense, as they've shown against Concordia and St. John's, just under pressure from a good quarterback kind of crumbles.
Yeah.
And they allowed 13 points, which still, I mean, relatively speaking, is not a lot, but 13 points, 200 some yards in the first half alone, that's really bad. But then they come back the second half, do not allow a score. I think they limited them to 100 yards passing. And when they needed a big play the most, the defense delivered.
Yeah.
So after the Tommies score to go up 14-13, Gustavus still has about 2.5 minutes, and they march down the field. In three plays, they're on the Tommy 40-yard line.
Yep.
And at that point, you know, they're in field goal range, and long field goal range for a D3 kicker, but one that we've seen some kickers make before.
Right.
And out of nowhere, pass over the middle, Adam Brandt comes up and snags a pass.
Yeah, well, it was going towards the top or the far sideline.
Far sideline.
Adam Brandt makes the play of the year.
And that, I think more so than the touchdown to Gabe Green, which was clutch. I think that was the defining play of the Tommy season, where when it came down to it, this defense-run, ground-and-pound-oriented team, defense first, comes up, defense makes the play to save the season. And so going forward against Bethel, going forward into the playoffs, say what you will, say our pass defense needs work, say our passing game needs work, say there's a quarterback controversy, who's going to get the start next week, it doesn't matter. As long as this team has this strong of a defense, has this good of a running game, they've got a chance in any game they might play. Whether or not they make it to the championship, that's a different question. But they will at least have a chance in every single game they play throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah, and the Gussies had the ball actually on the 29-yard line. That's a 47-yard field goal. Adam Brandt makes the play of the year with that interception to save the Tommy season in all likelihood. But like you said, we do have a quarterback controversy now. Who is going to start next week? I mean, I'm guessing it's going to be Jacques, but we'll see both of them.
Well, it's interesting. When we were talking to Coach Caruso after the game for Tommy Media, the article we were on, our sports editor asked, Coach to walk him through the decision to put Jones in. As a coach would, just had high praise for both players, said they handled the situation well, kind of dodged the question. But interestingly enough, he said that there is a possibility that he might use both quarterbacks against Bethel. So I don't think that's going to happen. I think preferably for any team, any football team ever, you want to have a consistent quarterback and stick with them throughout the game. But I think what that does do is leave the door open for who will get the start against Bethel. For the first 5 weeks of the season, Jacques Perra looked like a significantly better quarterback than last season. Had a completion percentage around 70%, was making some really good throws, making some really timely throws, looked comfortable in the pocket. But I think from St. John's on, he has just not looked the same. He's fallen back into some bad habits that he had last season and has just not looked as sharp, has not looked as clean.
You're absolutely right. Something flipped after that St. John's game, and you could see it was pretty evident. Down in St. Peter this weekend that he was not comfortable in the pocket. The rush was getting in, and his eyes weren't downfield. His eyes were on the defensive lineman coming at him, and it was in his head. You could tell. Ronnie comes in and plays phenomenal, and his legs really add a whole different dimension to this offense that I love watching, because he's fast, and he keeps his eyes downfield, and he can escape the pocket and still make throws and run for quite a bit of yards. I'm really hoping we see Ronnie next week in Arden Hills against Bethel.
Now, I'm still nervous for either quarterback. Mostly because against Gustavus, Ronnie was still being forced out of the pocket. He wasn't deciding to run himself. The pressure was getting to him. So this line, for as well as they've been playing up to this point, the past couple of weeks, they've been allowing pressure through, and it's been getting to the quarterbacks. And I'm typically more of a pocket passer guy. I like watching quarterbacks who can just stay in there and fired over the middle, get some big gains that way. Running quarterbacks have always scared me. They will continue to scare me, and particularly the way in which both quarterbacks are running. I think Jones is slightly faster, slightly more athletic than Jacques Perra. Both of them are quick guys and can run down the field, and we've seen Jacques run for 30, 40, 50 yards in a game. I just think that the running, while it does add a dimension to the offense, is more a sign of weak points for this offensive unit, for the protection, and for the quarterback.
And some of it's got to be put on the receivers, too, on Pelini and Gabe Green, and then get those. They need to get it open faster so they can have their quarterback get rid of the ball in 2 or 3 seconds because he doesn't have the time throw the ball.
Because a lot of the passes that happened in Gustavus, both from Jones and from Perra, were checkdowns, were throws 4 or 5 yards over the middle to the tight end, swing routes to Josh Parks or whoever's in at running back. There weren't a lot of downfield throws.
And part of it is because we don't have a guy like Joe Reed a couple years ago who Fenske could just throw it 60 yards and Joe Reed's going to run underneath it and run for a touchdown. We don't have a guy like that this year where you can just throw it up and say, go get it.
Right. And so this team is operated around – it's built around the run. And it's built around a short passing game, which in effect works like a run game where, you know, there's really no difference between a handoff or a toss and a quick slant for 3 yards. I mean, the blocking is still fairly similar once you start getting downfield. And so when it works well. But we've seen now 2-3 times in the season that it has not worked. And the Tommies lost the game to St. John's, and they almost lost this game to Gustavus.
Yep.
And it's just a bigger issue than I think can be fixed in the next couple of weeks.
We'll look ahead to Bethel after the interview, but here, let's get to this now with Coach K and Matt Mitchell. Here it is. We now welcome on the defensive coordinator here at the University of St. Thomas, Coach K, and linebacker Matt Mitchell. Guys, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us on.
Yep, thanks for having us on.
Coach, I've been looking forward to this one for a long time, and we're going to start right with the hard-hitting questions. What's your go-to pregame music?
Definitely Machine Head. When it's cold out now, or it's starting to get cold and bad now, it's a nice, cool excuse to wear my hat wherever I go. I just got a new Machine Head beanie.
Nice.
And my buddy bought me at the concert. Got a chance to see Machine Head, which is my all-time favorite band in the whole world, for the last like 15 years, and I've never seen them live, and I got to see them recently live. So, but usually something with a guitar in it, something that's probably a lot heavier than what the listeners probably listen to.
Yep. So if you had a choice of the pregame music, you'd be playing Machine Head.
Definitely.
Yep. Do you get any say in that in the pregame tape?
I don't know. There's no like. What do you mean?
Like the music they're playing at the stadium before home games.
No.
Anyway, you get no.
I wish.
No.
We barely get any say in it.
Yeah.
We throw our suggestion there and it kind of just gets moved around.
Yeah. It's fairly the same. I mean, they keep most of the same songs.
There was guidelines to when we started doing it that we have to have a specific song. It's just because that's how Coach Crusoe wants the ebb and flow before the game.
Yeah, okay. And I know when you go into the locker room, you don't hear all the songs. My first year playing, you didn't hear all the songs, but now that I'm with Tommy Media, I stay out on the field the whole time. There's some good songs on there.
That's credit to Mark Dowdle.
Good stuff. How about you? What's your go-to?
I'm all over the place. I try and, when we get there early in the morning, I try and keep it calm, and I'll listen to, like, country and stuff. Me and Tucker Treadle will be throwing songs back to each other all the time, and then as we get closer to the game, I'll get a little bit heavier. I'll get up to Coach K's level sometimes, just whatever I'm feeling that day. Yeah. Never necessarily the same stuff all the time. I just bounce it around.
So you mentioned we're getting closer to cold weather here now, and we were talking to Coach Crusoe after the game against Gustavus, and he said that the Tommies are built for cold weather games. How do you build a team to be ready for these? Because when it gets cold weather, you know, passing games going down, it's a lot of, you know, fighting in the trenches, tough, gritty, narrow wins like the one at Gustavus. How do you build a team to be that tough, to have that toughness, that edge, particularly when temperatures get below freezing, you start getting cold rain, snow?
No doubt. I mean, it's a grit. It's a toughness. It's an attitude. I think we all draw a lot of strength from the head guy. Coach Crusoe is phenomenal, and he's got a real tough mentality. It's an offensive line type mentality for the whole team. It doesn't matter what position you're playing, but I think everybody draws a lot of strength from Coach, and when it gets cold out, you gotta run the ball and stop the run. You gotta be gritty, gotta be tough, and yeah.
It's kind of a stereotype that defensive players like the cold and offensive players are softer and don't like the cold. Would you find that true, Matt?
Yeah, I do. You know, the offense is a little bit more finesse, and they like throwing the ball and stuff, and the run game hurts them. For us, I mean, we're the hammer. We're not the nail most of the times, and so when they're trying to run the ball against us, it hurts them more than it hurts us, especially when your hands are cold, you're holding on the ball, you get helmets on them and stuff. It doesn't feel as good as when it's warm out, so I think that defensive players like the cold because, you know, that makes them run the ball. And I personally love when they try to run the ball. So it always fits into what I like to do in football.
I was watching a Packers-Vikings game at Lambeau a couple of years ago. It was dead winter, super cold, I think, below zero. And the defensive lineman for the Vikings had a requirement for every single one of the guys that they could not wear long sleeves, that they had to go, you know, the tucked in sleeves, the bare arms all the way down. Have y'all ever done anything like that? Any requirements where you can't have any extra warmth protection?
No, I mean, there's no like guy, we won't sit there where like, no, you can't wear sleeves. You want to wear sleeves, you can wear sleeves. I never wear sleeves personally. I honestly think that when we start playing, like it gets hot, like no matter how cold it is. So, I mean, I get hot anyway. If I'm moving around, if you're on the sidelines, like more power to you. You wear sleeves, you're going to get cold and sick. But no, we've never been. I mean, sometimes it's frowned upon. Like, we're like, really, you're wearing sleeves? But most of the time, no. If you want to wear sleeves, go
for it. I don't care. You can frown upon me all you want. I'm wearing a big puffy jacket that's really, really warm. I remember in 2011, went to Whitewater, and it was the coldest game that I'd ever coached in, ever. And I didn't have anything. I was unprepared at all, and it affected my play calling. I'm like, I am freezing right now. Like, I need to get this massive puffy coat, and I don't care. Like, you can call me soft or whatever. I'm getting warm.
Coach, I've played under two coaches who wear gloves while they coach, and one of them was my high school offensive coordinator, total badass, and the other was you, another total badass. Your thoughts on that?
On the gloves?
Yeah. What's the purpose behind them?
I don't put a lot of thought into it. I guess I always feel like football is taken away from me from a playing standpoint. I love it. It's a blast. I have a real cool, soft, you know, beautiful side with my family, my boys, my wife. And when I get a chance to be on the football field, not the necessarily the planning part of it, which I love, that chess match, but the practice, the games, like now it's time to be somebody a little bit different, and it's like a switch that you get to flip, and it's like putting on a helmet, and I don't get a chance to put on a helmet, and I love the gloves. It kind of feels like I get a chance to flip the switch a little bit.
You get the gloves on, you're back in game mode. I love it.
Right.
I love it. Matt, it's no secret that this defense blitzes a lot, and Coach K, I think you would say you love the blitz. Is that true?
I would rather blitz, yeah.
Yeah. How much do you love playing for that kind of defense?
It's a blast. I mean, being able to – the last time I said the way we were able to flip the script on offense is we attack them, they don't attack us. It's been a completely revolutionary way of playing defense, and I think that that's something that is so awesome to be a part of. And to be able to be a part of that for 4 years of consistently doing the same thing, it's been a blast.
Mm-hmm. And you guys have been together for a long time. Coach, you signal the plays into Matt. Mm-hmm. What's that – you know, connection, what's your relationship like?
Oh, it's phenomenal. I mean, it started on the recruiting trip. I mean, there's just a really cool connection, you know, that I felt when he came on his trip, and, you know, it just continues. He's got a lot of toughness. He's got a lot of grit. He's the smartest football player that I've coached. He's really, really bright, and it started really, really early, you know, when he was a freshman. And we're just like, Matt, at that point, the defense was really complex. So we try and make it simpler now, but, you know, he caught on to it right away. So I guess I lost my train of thought as to what the question
the
was.
The relationship. Yeah, your relationship.
Right.
Yeah,
you're right. He's awesome. He's got a great sense of humor. I send him all kinds of music. Uh-huh. He says he likes him. I don't know. It sounds
Machine
like
head.
He's listening to the country now and stuff like that. I
listen
know.
To it all.
Yeah. Everybody says that. My favorite, like I'm not, my favorite's the metal. So, but I don't know. I mean, other than when, you know, he calls his own plays, which rarely ever happens. It feels comfortable looking at him and him looking at me and being able to call the play call.
So okay, I've been hanging on to this one for a while. St. Olaf, I think it was the third series on defense. It was a third down, and you were playing corner.
Safety.
Mark Dowdle was playing nose tackle. What do we call that play? Everybody was everywhere. Nobody was playing their right position. What do we call that?
Yeah, that's Matt's play. You that's should ask play? Him. I don't know what that play call was.
That play call was bench saddle bronze St. Olaf special. And that was something last year. That was a legacy rep, actually, from the guys last year. Austin Yoakum, Steve Harrell, Dylan Andrew, those guys, they thought about it last year during that game. They wanted to do the thing where we all switched positions, mm-hmm. but we didn't do it last year. So then we thought we owed it to them to do it this year. So, and the biggest proponent, that wasn't my play. That was Chris Fonikowski's play.
Okay,
Fonda. And so Fonda the whole time is like, we're doing it. I'm like, no, we're not. Stop. And then right before the game, it's like, Matt, we got to do it. I'm like, all right, if we are winning, we're all in. It's like the second possession, we're winning. And it's a third down and long, we can do it.
Uh-huh.
And then we get out there, and I'm like, oh, my God, it's going to happen. And so then I went out there, and Chris was looking at me with, like, puppy dog eyes. And yeah. he's just like, come on, let's do it. Yeah, I'm like, yeah. all right, dude, let's do it. Fine, whatever. And so then we did it, and we ended up causing him to scramble.
Uh-huh.
Four-yard gain, fourth down. We went insane. Like, all we ran yep, all right yep, over there. We yep. are so going nuts. It was wild.
So you didn't know it was COVID, Coach?
No, I'm so trained into what I look at on each individual play that out of the corner of my eye, I saw a corner that was not aligned appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
And then I looked on the other side of the field and saw number 10 out there playing corner. I was like, man, what did he call in there? Like, he must have called a different coverage. Like, this is wrong. And
yeah.
and Adam Brandt is just covering somebody yeah. that's – And I wasn't even looking at the guy closest to me, uh-huh. which was Luke Swenson, who is a D lineman,
yep.
covering number one wide receiver. And when Matt comes out the field, I'm like, I got my arms up. I'm saying, what did we call? And Matt looks at me and says, sorry. And then goes to the side.
Olaf special.
So aside from that play, have you ever like called like actual plays? Have you ever been a defensive play caller in any situation?
No. I mean, honestly, I don't even want that at this point. Like, we have so much stuff to think about when we get the play call. For me to be able to be out there and be like, okay, let's run this play, that would not go well. It's much better to have somebody that's not in the huddle making the play call. So, no. Maybe like a flag football. My roommate's playing the intramural football league here. Mm-hmm. I call plays for them. I tell them like they should go and like press everybody, play two over top safeties and stuff like that. But no, nothing other than
they
that.
Any good?
They were. They're not doing well anymore. Yeah. Actually, our nose guard just broke his nose, Grant Hockert. So
oh boy.
He got caught up in a rush. So they've been actually not playing too well. But now they have, Greg Ebacher.
Oh, perfect.
And they have the effort is through yeah. the roof yeah. right now.
Well, does he have eligibility?
He sure does. He sure does.
Coach, when Caruso comes on the locker room every once in a while, he'll say, you know, I've already watched 4 hours of film this morning. You know, I woke up at 3 a.m. and I couldn't sleep. Do you find that to be true? You can't sleep sometimes during the season and you're watching film for countless hours?
Definitely. It's happened a lot this week. You get caught up on a certain formation or certain player, certain situation, and then for me it just – I think about it on my drive home, and it's mm-hmm. It's in my mind, and I'm watching video, and you know with the family, and spending time with the boys, and having dinner, and giving my wife you know the time that she deserves, and then you know you got recruiting, and then you got to find a way to watch video. So it doesn't surprise me that you know guys watch video until the you know late hours like that, man. Sometimes, absolutely. Like, I won't be able to sleep because my mind will just be thinking about, you know, what would be the next mm-hmm. step.
Have you developed any sort of shortcuts or patterns to help with reducing time or make the time more efficient? I mean, you're facing, you know, 8 of the same teams every single year, and none of them, you know, radically change their offenses from season to season. So do you have any patterns or strategies you've fallen into to help make the film process not shorter but more efficient?
Yeah, I mean, when I was a young coach, we prepared for everything and prepared for things that, you know, you maybe couldn't see, but you could think that, hey, maybe this would be something that would be tough against what we do, and you create ghosts in your mind, and it's just not healthy. I can remember at another school, like, we used to meet way too long. Like, there were some, you know, some 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock nights where we're in the office meeting. It's just unproductive. But we're, you know, we're sitting there as a staff arguing over a front that we're going to use the next day. And then we run the front 3 times. And one of them's a run for 8 yards, a run for 2 yards, and the other one's an incomplete pass. And it's like, good thing we spent 4 hours talking about that. So I said, less is way more. I got a quote in my office. Steve Belichick did this real cool book, The Methods of Scouting. And in the book, his his longtime Navy coach, phenomenal mind from a scouting standpoint, no doubt. But in the book, he quotes, "Be alert for be strong against an opponent's strength. Be alert for anything that they've shown. If they do beat you, force them to beat you with something that you haven't seen before." And that's what we try and do. We try and zero in on who they are and what they're doing. And for whatever reason, when you play St. Thomas, you like to do a lot of new stuff, like stuff that mm-hmm. you've never done before. Usually right. that doesn't work out because, our boys are really good. They're really fast. And if you're doing something that you're not convicted in, that you're not practicing, and we're just being us, then it usually ends up being a bad deal for the other team. But mm-hmm.
So as Brady was I didn't mean to interrupt you there, Brady, but as he was saying earlier, St. Thomas blitzes a lot. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you've just done from day one, or is that the current defense you have now, is that something you've kind of worked your way up to, blitzing this much?
We've always I played D-line in high school. I played D-line in college. I was always more comfortable getting after it as opposed to sitting back. Like, coach asked me, "Hey, you want to blitz or would you like to drop in this zone blitz?" I was like, "No, I don't think that's not my skill set." I guess it's always simpler to attack the quarterback and force him to make a decision really, really quick. And we've always done that in the past game, anywhere that I've been. And in 2015 is really when it changed. My thought process in the run game started to change. And once you're able to fit up the run game in the zone blitz game, then it's like carte blanche, and it's like, awesome. I get to bring pressure on every down, mm-hmm. and we can stop the run and the pass. Because the hardest part about football, from a defensive play caller standpoint, is when you don't know if they're going to – you don't have a tendency. It's 50-50. They could run the ball. They could throw the ball. And if you got something that's good in the run game and good in the pass game, and you can call it whenever you want, like, that's when it's a blast, and you can just bring it.
You mentioned that teams like to do stuff they've never shown on film. Carlton started going empty, and, teams do that a lot, to try to go empty and try to throw the ball. For both of you guys, put more pressure on you on game day to be able to adjust to stuff you haven't seen on film?
I can start, but, yeah, I mean, what those – like, St. John comes out and empty, and they mm-hmm. run empty 43 times right. out of 81 or whatever they ran, and we didn't see the specific type of empty that they were employing. And it was the best thing that ever happened. He's like, we want to be able to perform way better and mitigate some of that and get off the field and learn the lesson and still win a football game. Like, that's the best-case scenario. You mm-hmm. win a football game and still learn a lesson. We lost a football game, and it was massive failure on my part. But we got an opportunity now to work on empty every single day since that day, so that we have plans upon plans upon plans. And this Gustavus doesn't go empty. They went empty yesterday, and Carlton, as you said, they don't go empty. They mm-hmm. went empty. So Olaf motioned to empty. So mm-hmm. now we get a chance to practice all that stuff, which is great.
Yeah, and Carlton came out there. They kind of started doing some funky things because, they obviously know that they're playing us. And then they came out with their center on the hash, and then they had four offensive linemen yeah. into the boundary. And yeah. they just started just trying to do something to make us think more when we're out there, and I can respect that. They're doing their best to try and make something happen. But then that just comes to the point where, me and Adam are out there. We're looking at all this. We've seen weird stuff like that before. You just got to calm down, adjust on the run when you're on the field, and then get to the sideline and talk about it. And that's one of the best things our coaches do, is adjust on the run when we're in the game. And that's what makes us able to adjust to all these different formations, because our coaches are up top, they're on the field, and they're able to talk to us and tell us what we need to do going forward so that that doesn't hurt us. Mm-hmm.
So going back to last week against Gustavus, in the first half, 200-some passing yards allowed. But then throughout the second half, defense looked much better. If I remember correctly, did not allow a score in the mm-hmm. second half, and
correct.
The offense is able to pick it up and get the nail biter of the win. During those kinds of games, when the first half is significantly worse than the second half, how much of that going out back out in the second half, is that adjustment and how much of that is just kind of refocusing and executing better on what you've already planned?
Well, most of it is, like, we have a good defense, and it's usually a really good plan. So most of it is, you know, mitigating some of the failures and being able to learn and grow from it. They threw the ball all over us, on us in the first half. And the reality was that, you know, I'm not too worried about it. I mean, we had three plays for like 129 yards or something like that, that were three plays that the corner just didn't stay on top. He knows his mistake. He's a really good player. He's going to figure it out and be able to be better and grow from that. I don't know. It's more about we're not trying to be elitist at all, but it's more about us. That's our mentality. It's like, what can we do to be the best version of ourselves and fix what our technique is or our responsibility is? But sometimes, you know, it's a different, you know, tweak to a coverage or a different play call. You know, some play calls are really bad. I got a lot of bad play calls. You know, that's when the effort and the hustle and the will, you know, the boys comes in. I got a lot of bad play calls, like a lot. Like they're in my best games, you know, you're hammering at, you know, 65% good play call deal. Was that a D? I don't know. That's mm-hmm. a D.
Yeah.
That's not good. But when you got boys that care about each other and that work really, really hard and that hustle their butts off, you're able to mitigate those bad play calls. So.
And we got a couple minutes left here. I got one last question, and then we've got a little game for us to play. If you win on Saturday, you're getting into the playoffs, and likelihood that you can see a matchup with St. John's again, how much would you love that, both of you guys?
Oh, I'd love it. I mean, the way we felt coming off that field was not a good feeling. We know that we were beaten in more ways than one, not just the mm-hmm. game, you know. And so to be able to go, I mean, I would assume if that works out in whatever way, and then we don't control that, but if that works out, we'd probably end up there again. Just to go back there and feel how we felt and just be able to use it as a fire, I think that it would be great. I don't want to leave my senior year with that taste in my mouth with that team. Mm-hmm. And I would absolutely welcome the opportunity. It's a challenge that I think would be a defining moment for the senior class, a defining moment for the program moving forward. So I would love it.
I'm not going to say that I wouldn't love it, because I would. But the reality is that we got this massive, you know, really good football team this week that mm-hmm. we need to play well and, you know, we need to be able to beat, and that's all I'm focused on. Not focused on getting into the playoffs. I'm focused on winning this next game. Would I like another opportunity at St. John? Absolutely I would, but that's not what we got this week. Mm-hmm. And opportunities lost are often never regained, ever. Yeah. And I'd love to be able to play them again, but I'm not even thinking about St. John at all.
Gotcha. Althea, can I see these little notebooks here? All right, we're going to play this game. I'm going to ask you guys a question. You got to write down your answer. So I'm going to ask you guys each the same question. Our first one is going to be, what is Coach K's favorite food? All right, so you write down the answer. Don't look at each other, then we're going to reveal here.
For those of you listening at home, this is very similar to what many people refer to as the couples game. Seeing how well couples usually know each other, but in this case, how well coordinator and his player know each other.
Yeah. Matt's struggling. Oh, that's a good pick.
I mean, it's general.
All right, so Matt says steak. Coach?
Ooh. I don't know if the answer is right.
Meat? Hey, we'll count it.
Boom.
That counts.
I love all meat.
Plus one.
It doesn't matter.
Any particular kind of meat?
Really? No. I mean, I love all meat.
Like if we were to give you $50 right now and say, just go buy anything for lunch. I'm assuming it'd be some sort of meat.
Yeah.
What would you go for?
I don't know. I don't need $50. I'd love to go. I'd maybe take a train or something, go to Chicago and go to Portillo's, get an Italian beef sandwich with some hot giardinara on there. Yeah.
That sounds really good.
Yeah. You don't even have to take a train anymore. You can go to Woodbury.
Oh, the bus.
Touche.
Question two. Who was Matt's favorite NFL player growing up? Spelling doesn't count.
And we did talk about this on the first episode that Matt was on a few weeks ago.
See if Coach was listening. All right, you ready?
I don't know.
Who do you got here?
I got Walter Payton.
Oh, that's a good guess.
Urlacher.
You went with Urlacher. That's a good guess, though, knowing he's from Chicago. Question number three. Where did Coach K grow up? We'll go state, because I have no idea.
Bonus points for city.
We'll go state. Bonus point for a city.
I know it's Minnesota.
Is it?
But
yeah, for sure.
Is it Blaine? Did you?
Yep.
Yeah.
Blaine, 2 points.
Blaine, I know Matt Mitchell went back.
Last question here, guys. This is a tough one. What's Matt's girlfriend's name?
Man, what a bad coach. What a bad coach.
You do have a girlfriend, right, Matt?
Not at the moment, though.
No? All right. Well, what's his ex-girlfriend's name? Do you have an ex-girlfriend? Most recent ex-girlfriend?
Yes.
No idea, Coach.
I feel like we probably should have vetted these questions before we run.
I thought you had a girlfriend.
No. I don't know. This is a guess. Good guess.
No.
Elise, he says.
Kylie.
Poor Kylie. Mm.
Right, well, we have a tradition here on Keep the Ball. So, first off, that was, what, 2 of 4? So, not bad.
Not bad.
But yeah, we have a tradition here on Keep the Ball Rolling where we ask our guests, Matt is familiar with this, a recurring question throughout the season and keep a running tally. So Althea, if you want to come on over here real quick, this is the producer question we ask. So Althea, take it away.
All right. Hi, guys. So we like to ask, at the 2014 NFC Championship, when the Packers faced the Cowboys, did Dez catch it?
I got it on the video here for you, Coach.
Are you familiar with this game, Coach?
I know Matt said no. You said no, right?
That's not a catch. Let me see. Is there an end zone copy?
Yeah, there will be another angle coming up here pretty soon.
Like a catch.
Because so far throughout the 8 episodes we've done this season, Matt is the only person to say that it was not a catch.
Really? I don't watch a lot of NFL. Oh, that's a catch.
Oh.
So he is kind of bobbling it, though.
Yeah.
Because the biggest dispute that came up was whether or not he made a football move. Because he has.
That's a football move, trying to get the ball in the end zone. I never know with the NFL. Like, the ball can't cause a fumble, but
yeah,
it can.
Yeah.
Like, it can't, but it can.
Yeah.
Like, I don't get it. You can get up without, you know, without being touched. Obviously, he's being touched right there, but the ball can't cause a fumble, but the ball can cause a fumble. I don't get it.
Yeah, so he gets 1, 2, 3, leans for the end zone, and then the ground causes
like
the fumble.
A catch.
All right, so Matt, you're still on the island.
That's what?
The no catch island.
6-1 now?
6-1, I think that's so, fine. Yeah.
We should start writing these names down somewhere so we can keep better track.
We'll get a wall going on the wall here. Well, gentlemen, thanks for coming in. We wish you the best of luck against Bethel this weekend and for the rest of the season, guys. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us on.
So that was Coach K and Matt Mitchell. We thank those guys for coming on during a busy week here as they get ready to play Bethel for a game that's going to be winning in to the NCAA playoffs. A big one.
Yeah,
a big
it'll
one
be
this week.
Huge. And Bethel is trending upward. I mean, the last season, and I think the season before, they kind of had a couple down years. They had graduated some of their key players, but they're back now. They're 22nd in the nation. They've got a strong team. And we were talking about it in the first segment. Some of the troubles that St. Thomas had against Gustavus, they need to solve those and solve those quickly if they're going to have a shot against a team like Bethel.
Yeah, I think Bethel's a little better matchup for St. Thomas. They're going to be more balanced than Gustavus was. At least that's what they look like. Coach K mentioned that oftentimes when teams play St. Thomas, they like to change what they do. It doesn't always work out, but they have a really good quarterback in Jerron Rostia, I think is his name. I listened to one Bethel broadcast, and that's how they pronounced it. So I have no idea if that's how you pronounce his name, but we're going to call him Jerron or something like that.
Let's just call him Rostia. I like
Rostia. Okay, we'll call him Rostia. So, yeah, you mentioned they're 22nd, and this is a big physical quarterback. He's like 6'3", 220-something, played at the U of M for a year and transferred to Bethel. It's his first year there. A good quarterback who can run, and he'll stand in the pocket and take hits. So it'll be a tough challenge for this defense.
And that's kind of the remedy or the antidote for a St. Thomas defense. As Coach K was talking about, they like getting after the quarterback and getting after him quickly. And so if Roasty can stay in the pocket and take some of these hits and say, you know what, I see you're blitzing, I really don't care.
Yeah.
I'm going to beat you anyway. I mean, that we saw that. I feel like I'm beating a dead horse week in and week out, but against Concordia, against St. John's, quarterbacks who are willing to go spread, you know, five wide and stay in the pocket and take advantage of the one-on-one matchups. Because for as much as St. Thomas blitzes, I mean, that unit, that entire defensive philosophy is built around getting the quarterback and getting around the quarterback quickly so that the secondary doesn't have to cover that long.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't matter how good a coverage you've got. If you're not getting after the quarterback, a corner can't hold man for 8, 9, 10 seconds.
Right.
Someone's going to break free. And as Coach K said, there were three plays of, what, 150 yards or something like that?
120. Three plays for 120.
120 yards where the corner just did not stay on top.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that, I mean, you need better execution, but also St. Thomas just generated no pass rush. So they need to get to the quarterback quickly, often, and really help out this secondary if they're going to have a shot against Bethel. Because traditionally they've been a run team, a run-oriented team. But as Coach K said, teams have been showing St. Thomas looks that they haven't seen mm-hmm. all year. And a lot of teams are opting to go to the spread, to go to a pass-oriented offense, because that's the biggest weakness for St. Thomas.
Right. This is a Bethel team that's pretty balanced offensively. I expect them to pass a lot more because that's, you know, we talked about that's the weakness of the St. Thomas defense is you can get the ball downfield. But when we look at the other side of the ball for Bethel, they also have a really good defense. I mean, they've had two shutouts the last 2 weeks, and they held a Concordia team to 13 points. I mean, they beat them 41-13. This is a really good football team, and this is going to be a very, very good football game, a St. Thomas, St. John's type feel to this Bethel-St. Thomas game that's going to be a win-and-in situation.
Speaking of which, good football game leads to some fun bets.
Yeah,
so
sure does.
In the first segment, paid up to Brady. You sided with Brady last time, didn't you, Althea?
I did.
I bought you the coffee with the money I won from the first week. Does that mean we're good, or are you expecting something?
No, I would say that we're good.
Okay, cool. Because I think I've got like $2 left or something like that, if you want it.
Go buy yourself a coffee, Noah.
Okay. I can't buy myself a coffee with $2. What kind of coffee do you think I drink?
This
McDonald's
is true.
Coffee? You get some McDonald's coffee?
That's not even coffee, Brady. Okay. Come on. But anyway, so going into Bethel, you know, it's become a lot harder to come up with these bets because, you know, when we first started it, playing a team where we could blow them out and we had this ridiculous score bet. So I think what we agreed upon for this one, though, is points allowed. So the same time as defense.
We're putting the line at 14?
Let's put the line at 17.
17, okay. I'm taking the under.
You're taking the – okay, I'll take the over.
So you just hurt yourself. You could have had 14, but well, you went for 17. That's fine. Okay, I'll take it.
Because I'm thinking my score bet for this one will be 21-17 St. Thomas.
Okay. I'm going to say Ronnie Jones, I hope, starts the game and plays well, and Tommy scored 28, and Bethel scores 10.
Okay.
28-10, Tommy's roll.
Okay.
Althea?
Now, before we do that, can we move back down to 14?
Sure.
Okay, I'm going to say 21-14.
I'll give you 14. So I'm taking the under on 14. Okay. You're taking the over on 14. Another five on the table. Althea, who are you going with this week?
You're 2 for 2 so far.
I know. The pressure's on. I'm like looking at their past scores right now. I think I'm going to go with Noah this week.
No.
Heck yes. There we go.
It's going to be a 2 for 3 now.
No.
I don't know.
She's
about
going
that.
Perfect. Perfect close at the regular season.
Don't jinx me yet.
Well, we look forward to Saturday because we'll see then.
Yeah. Well, that's all we got for you here on KTBR. Keep the ball rolling for Brady Helbmeyer and Althea Larson. I'm Noah Brown, and we'll see you next week.
Win and in.
This episode of Keep the Ball Rolling was brought to you by KUST Campus Radio. A student-operated, non-commercial radio station, KUST provides students and faculty of St. Thomas a platform dedicated to creative storytelling, diverse viewpoints, and exploring a vast array of audio content. Tune in at any time to KUST at Mixlr.com/KUST-radio.